If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland here on Turkey Week. It's Tuesday morning. Nebraska plays on Black Friday. We'll be enjoying our Thanksgiving with family. Evan, how are you? How are you ready for Thanksgiving? You ready for the Turkey Day? You ready for Black Friday?
I'm ready, Sam. I think there's a reason that there aren't a lot of restaurants that have Thanksgiving food in them. So it feels like it's kind of a once a year thing. You get into the turkey and the mashed potatoes. And I personally am not a stuffing guy, but I know that a lot of people enjoy that. So let's do this thing. It's a short week for football, and man, it feels like the end of the year's come up real quick, but Thanksgiving's always fun. Try to slide that one in there a little bit, little day with family. And then, man, we're on off to the races for December and on, right?
The life of a beat writer in college football is you slide Thanksgiving in. Like everybody else is like, I'm going to take off work starting on Tuesday and I'll be back on Monday. That's not our story. I'm lucky enough, I am a stuffing guy, that my mom and my mother-in-law both make great stuffing. And so I'm going to get two stuffings. I'm going to get stuffed with stuffing on Thursday. Watch a little football in the afternoon. NFL football. They've moved almost all the college games off of that day. We will get into an incredible weekend of college football. It's going to be one of those weekends where I'm going to enjoy Saturday. I don't get to enjoy Friday the way that a lot of other fans do, but I'll get to enjoy Saturday. Nebraska plays Iowa on Friday. That's pretty much been the tradition since 2011. Prior to that, it was Colorado. Prior to that, it was Oklahoma. That tradition actually began in 1990, and it was an ugly start to the tradition for Nebraska. They lost 45-10 to Oklahoma on that day. Mickey Joseph lacerated, I think, his leg on the bench of OU's sideline or Nebraska's sideline. I can't remember, but it was a blowout loss. And what was interesting about that season is Nebraska started that season with incredible promise. They were really, really good. I think they were number two in the country. On the same day that Virginia was playing Georgia Tech, Virginia was number one. Nebraska was playing Colorado pretty much at the same time. And it was, both games were very interesting. Georgia Tech came back, obviously, and stunned Virginia in Charlottesville. And then Colorado came back and stunned Nebraska in Lincoln. And then Nebraska lost to Oklahoma. And then Nebraska went to a bowl game and they lost to Georgia Tech. They were one of the few teams that played both national champions that season. It went from a team that many people thought was going to win the national title to a team that finished with three losses, and they kind of headed into 1991 with a big question mark. It was one of those moments where, you know, everybody was kind of like, okay, you know, is this a program? Is this thing going in the direction that we thought it was just a few weeks before? And I bring that up, obviously, to tee up this Iowa game. And, of course, Nebraska's been pretty good on Black Friday over the years. Once that thing shifted to Colorado in 96, they dominated that series against Colorado. Obviously, they lost in 01 and in 02 and a couple other times. But the reality is they dominated Colorado from 1996 to 2010. And then, of course, against Iowa in 2011, 2012, they win those. They win in 2014. And since then, they've won one time. They've lost 9 out of the last 10. And you have a situation where they haven't won in Memorial Stadium against Iowa since 2011. So Black Friday has become, in a sense, sort of a sad Friday for Husker football. Now we arrive at this Black Friday, and Nebraska is 7-4, having lost 37-10 last weekend at Penn State. We're gonna play Matt Rhule and not spend a lot of time on that game. Maybe in the offseason you and I can recount what that post game was like. You're sort of standing outside the tent. I'm in the tent. Everybody's just, it's like we're in wartime. Construction everywhere. Very strange scene. It's obvious that Penn State football was under construction. But the performance was poor enough that it feels like there's more at stake on Friday than just one game and just a rivalry and just a trophy. But that's my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I mean, just go back to last year. A year ago, you've got Iowa City police keeping Nebraska off of midfield, and then Nebraska not shaking hands with Iowa at the coin toss. And what a tone that set. I think certainly it's something that the players are sensitive to. This is a fan game to me, though, Sam. Like this is the one real border rival that Nebraska has. It's a reminder of why regional conferences were always so great when Nebraska was playing Kansas and Kansas State and Iowa State, and people worked together and talked trash. And like, it's, how many UCLA fans or how many Penn State fans the local Husker fans know? Probably not that many. So like, this is a throwback to that, I think. You remember when the Heroes Trophy began and it felt sort of manufactured and corporate. I think it's really, they both sides have really fit into that now. There's so much baggage. I think the Iowa fans still love to stick it to Nebraska from all those years of feeling like the younger brother. Nebraska fans have tried not to make this a rivalry, but man, how many walk-off field goals and how many, gut punches does one fan base have to take before they buy in and say, yeah, we want to beat Iowa? And I think they've gotten to that point. I've heard that from a lot of fans in the last couple of years that have said, just beat Iowa at the end, please. Just finish them off. And so it does. It sets up a really interesting game. I thought it was interesting that the players hadn't even dried off from the Penn State game and they were already talking Iowa. Like they that, that the shift was so that was the quickest shift I can think of when that Nebraska's made from one opponent to the next in that game. I think they understand how big it is. And yeah, I mean, you talk about the difference now between 7-5 and 8-4. About another losing November versus, hey, you broke even and you got one of the bigger wins of the Matt Rhule era. Like it's important. It's the kind of thing that takes momentum into the next month, the kind of tangible piece that you can take and say, yeah, they took a step. There was some progress here, and maybe they underachieved at times, but they finished well. So I feel like there's a lot on the line here for just from a momentum standpoint. You want to prove what just happened at Penn State was not who you are in terms of how you stop the run and how physical you are. So I think all that plays into this thing, and it's going to change the tone of December and the offseason, I think, based on how it goes.
Iowa was a convenient lean-to on Saturday night. I felt like it was, well, we've got Iowa, and they're only in 6 days, and so we can't really linger on what happened at Penn State. For what it's worth, I thought Nebraska had a very hard task going to Happy Valley. I didn't think they'd win the game, and they didn't. I thought that the margin was longer and wider than I thought it would be, but at the same time, it was not going to be an easy game. Penn State's finally hitting on all the cylinders that it hoped to hit on early in the season, and it's hitting on them now, which I'm sure they wish they would have hit on them in the middle of the season. But now's the time. Starting with that Indiana game, Penn State was starting to kind of take off, and you could tell that that program was getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And maybe they peaked against Nebraska, although I do think they will beat Rutgers. So I'm gonna pin you down a little bit here. A couple weeks ago, you said this season is progress regardless of what happens in the last two games. Do you still believe that?
Yeah, but not as much obvious progress as it was. I think you have to squint a little bit to see it. If you finish 7-5 with the schedule that they had, I think you can still point to certain things and say, that they developed more. It'd be more of an individual story, I think. And the year Emmett Johnson had, the promise of TJ Lateef in the future, you point to the youth and you're building on that, but you have to kind of spin it a little bit. I think you just have to. It's not obvious. If you beat Iowa, it's more obvious. That's a team that they, as you said, they haven't beaten but one time in the last decade. They haven't had the winning November. I still think that was another thing that this program could show that, hey, let's win games in November when it gets cold, and can you be tougher and deeper than the other team? And outside of a playing a bad honestly, a bad UCLA team in the Rose Bowl. They just haven't done that to this point. So I think you can sell it as progress, and I think you can sell it as urgency to rebuild things through the portal. And Matt
Right.
Rule's made it clear they have the resources to do it now. There's, I think, pretty obvious checklists, but in terms of both lines of scrimmage and other areas where they need to upgrade. So if you lose this thing, certainly that's going to be the focal point in the next couple of months. That's the zeal. That's where the zeal is going to go from the fans. Who are you going to add? How are you going to flip the roster? But I think it's more muted in terms of the progress. I mean, the record is better, but again, the context of the schedule and the games that you let slip away. Minnesota was clearly one you want back. You had leads against, USC and Michigan was there for the taking for a time. So I do feel it. Think it feels like more of a missed opportunity of a season, really, than celebrating an improvement in the record.
You always hold out chance that if Nebraska loses on Friday and then they go to a bowl game and they play like Utah and they beat Utah, that would be, well, look at this. Wah! And I get it. That I would actually probably feel the same way too, because Utah is good, really good. They're going to finish 10 and 2 and they're not going to go to the playoff because they had a harder schedule than everybody in the Big 12. But I think Friday's game is extremely important. Obviously, Matt Rule's not going anywhere. He's going to be here for actually quite some time, I suspect. I don't think any school's coming along to pay the 15 mil anytime soon, and I think he's going to stick around. So this is a long haul kind of deal. That's what the contract extension was for. And by that, I don't mean 30 years. I mean he'll be here for a while, several years, 5 years, at least. So this isn't like anything about, referendum. But it also is a question of like, okay, how do you get to where you want to go? And where they want to go is to qualify for the college football playoff. And Troy Dannon built that into Rule's contract. Now, anytime you build things into people's contract, they're going to remember them. Just like we remember that Nebraska finished in the top whatever of the Athletic Director's Cup because the AD gets a bonus for it. Same thing here. So the college football playoff is the goal, and they've got to find a way to get into that playoff. And they weren't all that close this season. Let's just be honest. They weren't close at all at Minnesota or Penn State. They lost to USC and Michigan with incredible home crowds and a lot of momentum at home. They lost those games. And if they lose to Iowa on Friday, then they really will have lost to the five best teams on their schedule. Because I would put Iowa ahead. This is just me talking. I would put Iowa ahead of Cincinnati. I wouldn't put Minnesota ahead of Cincinnati. So I would say they lost to five of the six best teams on their schedule. But the game in Minnesota is harder than the game against Cincinnati in Arrowhead Stadium. And I was listening. I listen, by the way, to Big Ten coaches' press conferences every week. Not all of them, but like maybe 12 of them. And I listen to PJ Fleck every week. So I've listened to something like 4 hours of PJ Fleck this year. PJ Fleck was talking about rivalry games. He goes, "One of the great things we have is we have three rivalry games." And he was referring to Wisconsin, Iowa, and Michigan. But then he goes, "And you could include Nebraska." And then he mentioned the broken bits of chair, which, is funny. It was a trophy, but like, no, that's not what he means. What he means is that it means something very deep to him to beat Nebraska. And he does. He beats Nebraska. He kicks Nebraska's butt. And so the games that really mattered on the schedule, if you don't beat Iowa, you didn't really win any of those games. I mean, you beat, I kind of laid it out for you. The combined Big Ten record of the teams that they've beaten so far is 8-24. And the best of those records is Northwestern. The second best is UCLA. And UCLA is 3-8. And Northwestern's 6-5. Maryland has won one game in the Big Ten. That was at Wisconsin. And Michigan State has won a zero. Now,
Right.
they're playing each other this weekend, I think, right? Michigan State's playing Maryland. So one of those games is somebody's going to win. UCLA is not beating USC. I don't even have them on the games list this week. And then Northwestern, tall task to beat Illinois. So, we're probably staring at. What are we looking at here? We're probably looking at, 9-27 if they don't beat Iowa. That's not
Right.
good. And so I think there's a sense of like, you got to go win games that matter. It isn't just your quality of play against Akron and Houston Christian, and their quality of play in those games was elite. But you got to go win games that matter. And they haven't done that yet this season. I think beating Iowa would do that. I think inside the program, there is a real desire to do this, to get this thing done. I don't think they rolled off the plane on Sunday and were like, okay, let's start planning for Iowa. No, that's not what they did. I mean, I think they're prepared. I think they're planned up, and they will have a good plan for Iowa. I think they've had a lot of tape to watch, and they'll have some ideas, especially offense to defense, of how to attack Iowa's defense and do that in Memorial Stadium. Iowa is actually not very good away from home. They have been great at Memorial Stadium, but they're not necessarily that good away from home otherwise. And so this is an opportunity for Nebraska. I think the 11 a.m. start helps. I mean, Iowa's got to wake up early in the morning and, you know, get to the stadium. Their fans probably won't be quite as plentiful because the game's at 11 a.m. So I think that all those things work in Nebraska's favor. I think this isn't a super important game. And I felt like you saw Matt Rhule's demeanor on Monday. He was kind of trying, you know, hey, this is a big game. Not going to talk too much. But then at the end, I was trying to ask him some questions about, you know, last year's game. And last year's game was astonishing when you look back at it. There's probably like 140 plays in the game, and Nebraska won 120 of them. And I'm not exaggerating. It was literally the stupidest situation I've ever seen on a punt return, where a guy's trying to get away from the punt, gets away from the punt, and some other guy who thought he didn't get away from the punt maybe hit the ball with his hand just before the Iowa guy hit the ball. Because they all thought it was a fumble, which it wasn't. It wasn't a fumble. But then Nebraska created the fumble by trying to recover a fumble that didn't happen.
Right.
And Iowa only scored three off of that. And then they threw a screen pass, a swing pass. It wasn't a screen pass. It was a swing pass. And it goes for 85 yards because, God bless him, the best defensive player on the team runs into another guy trying to make the tackle.
On a day the defense was great otherwise.
20 yards downfield. He's hustling. He's hustling. And he tackles him. He tackles his own guy. And then Nebraska has the ball with like 35 seconds left. It's so cold. I'm so sick. I was flu. I don't know what I have. Flu, gunk, whatever. And we can't even know what's going on. It's so cold. And it's like, Iowa forced a fumble, right? And it was unbelievable. Like, and I wasn't even sure. Like, we couldn't tell if it was a fumble. I couldn't tell. I'm like, what has happened? Did the ball actually come out before Dylan hit the ground? We don't know. They review it. It's upheld. And then their kicker, I don't know how long that kick was, 55 yards through frozen air. He kicks and he makes it.
Kicked a brick. Yeah, it was a brick.
And everybody thought it was going to go in before he kicked it. It's just, it was a galling game. And, you know, we didn't understand the handshake thing because we're not watching the pregame whatever, and we're up in the bleachers and we were packed in like sardines and we're in the press box and we can't see the handshake thing before the game. So we didn't really know about that, but we knew about the state trooper thing. And that game was crazy.
You know what's funny is that was just the latest one. The 23 game when they hit the walk-off with like their third string kicker after Nebraska threw the pick.
Yeah.
Or the blocked punt touchdown in 21.
Yeah, the 21 game was
the kickoff. Ridiculous. Like
it's Logan Smothers falling down. If he doesn't fall down, he scores a touchdown and Nebraska wins the game. It's on a zone read. And then that was the last play of the third quarter. They flipped the field, and that's when Iowa blocked the punt.
Yep.
Smothers fell down. He just fell down. I think he tripped over somebody's foot. If he doesn't fall down, it would have been because Iowa didn't even tie the game with that block punt. It was like 21-17 or something.
Yeah, but everybody knew. Everybody knew.
Right. Like that, if he scores, it would have been like 28-10, and it would have been over. Completely over. At that moment, the game would have been over. And yeah, I mean, you can't make it up the way they've lost the games.
Staggering.
Four walk-off field goals, by the way. So 2018, 2019, 23, 24. Those are the four. And, you know, the 2018 game, Iowa just beat Nebraska. That was a great football game. Probably the best game in the whole series since the Black Friday started again. Nebraska played really well that day. 2019, that was when Scott Frost played two different quarterbacks on the final drive. Anyway, Luke McCaffrey runs onto the field, and we're like, what is going on?
Yep.
And then Adrian doesn't run the clock out, and then they hit, you know, Nate Stanley, I think, hit Sam Laporta for 37 yards. I mean, it's just Scott mismanaged that moment, and we should have been way harder on him than we were after the game heated. He really mismanaged it. But I'm just saying that, like, given everything that happened last year and given what Nebraska needs this game, I do wonder. It was interesting. There was a good question asked yesterday about, like, well, hey, you know, what kind of education did you do on the rivalry? We're going to talk to the players today, and I think they'll give us more illuminating answers. But Rule was very, well, you know, I think that's done peer-to-peer. And I'm like, there's something about they just don't want to quite embrace the thing, even though I know internally it really matters. And I don't know. Until they win the game, I don't think they want to make it a huge deal yet or something. I'm not sure. But we'll see what Holgorsen says today. We'll see what Butler says today. I think Holgorsen's going to be really fired up because, you know, again, Nebraska wins that game if Isaiah Nayor catches a pass that goes, like, literally through his hands. I mean, and Holgorsen right. yanked him out of the game. You're out of here. He pulled him out. It's like, that was an unbelievable game. And I was so sick that, like, some of the game was just kind of happened. And I'm like, we're trying to ride on deadline. But going back and watching it, I'm like, how did Nebraska lose this game? Anyway, so I think Saturday's or Friday's important. I think it's super important. And, yeah, of course, you can go win a bowl game. And you can shock the world and beat Utah, you know, top 15 team. And, you know, everybody can, if they go to Vegas and Rule can stand up and go, you know, everybody said we didn't beat a ranked team. You know, they could do that legitimately.
Yeah, right.
And that would be the best win Nebraska's had in a long time. And I'm telling you, if they lose on Friday, they're probably going to Vegas, and they're probably facing either Utah, Arizona, or Jeff Sims at Arizona State.
That would be amazing.
And you better hope they face Arizona, Arizona State. I don't think you want to be a 14-point underdog against Utah. But you never know. I mean, something's going to happen where they go to Vegas, and they're going to play one of those three teams, and they're evenly matched against two of them. They're not well matched against the other. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, I mean, it's a big game. It's also the last game for Husker seniors at Nebraska, and we do this every year. You like this, and I appreciate that you do. You like doing these. No, it's really a cool thing to do because, like, it gives you a chance to actually tell the story of the program through the seniors who are there, and some years it's a group of guys that you barely know, but that's not the case this year. This year, it's a little different. And so we're going to rattle off. Now, the list I sent you, we're going to remove Malcolm Hartsog from it because it's very clear, based on Rule's comments, that he is not coming back. He is coming back. He is coming back to Nebraska for his fifth year. They redshirted him this year, so he's coming back. We are going to keep Emmett Johnson on there because I don't know if he's going to play at Nebraska again because of his NFL potential. And so we're going to keep him there because I think this would be the opportunity to do that because I don't know. I mean, he's been there for 4 years. He's not walking on Saturday or on Friday. He's not a senior per se, so he's not going to do that. But if the NFL says we think you're a third-round draft pick, I think he's got to go. And so I think it's worth talking a little bit about him today. Again, he's not a senior. He's not walking on senior day, but we're going to talk about him because he is Nebraska's top NFL prospect. Let's start the list with Javen Wright.
Seventh-year guy. Maybe the first ever to do it at Nebraska. Legacy kid who came in, changed positions. And what a fighter, fighting through some of the blood clots and other issues that he's had to be a contributor this year. I'll think of longevity and just a guy who grinded and made his last season one of his best.
Yeah, it's got a chance at maybe third team All Big Ten this year. Great smile, smart guy, generous with his time when he talks to us. He doesn't do interviews every week, but when he does, he always gives you something. And of course, his father was an incredible player at Nebraska. And Javen came here as a corner. He came here as a cornerback, a tall corner, and he eventually moved to middle linebacker And that tells you something about his transformation physically. Obviously battled blood clots for many years, tougher than nails. Sierra Wright.
The movie child of LeBron James comes in, and he's going to leave known for a lot more than that. Being a, I mean, essentially a 2-year starter at corner, one of Nebraska's better portal ads in the transfer era for sure. Charismatic, thoughtful, tougher than maybe his position would suggest that he would be. So certainly one of the success stories of the transfer era for Nebraska there.
Co-sign on all that. I like Sierra Wright. Marquise Buford.
Another guy, I'm going to remember him as a guy who weathered the transition. Like, he was a Frost era recruit through and through. They liked him. He stuck with it, battled through an injury. He's been a starter, was essentially put back into a reserve role as the season's gone on, but he's still one of the mouthpieces of the team, dynamic leader person. He's going to have a lot of success with whatever he does after football.
His best season was 2022 statistically, and he was on the field when they beat Iowa. So he knows what it's like. He can talk about that in depth. Dane Key.
You know, part of the annual reset through the portal of receivers for Nebraska, a guy who probably statistically didn't quite live up to what the expectations were for him coming in, but someone who still became a captain, which you got to give major credit for. And I think someone who, even when he's not catching a ton of passes, he's still earning a reputation as a pretty physical edge blocker and somebody who has ingratiated himself to the program for sure.
Yeah, I co-sign with all that. I felt like Hunter was the better of the two receivers that they signed. I know that they probably gave Key more money, but he had a nice season, and you know what? There's still one more game left. Maybe he catches that slant pattern that beats Iowa, and we would always remember him for that. So, yes, good player. Deshaun Singleton.
You want to go first on a couple of these?
On Deshaun, yeah. I've always just really appreciated his game. I think he plays hard. I think he hits hard. I think he is a long strider who can play in the box, who can play over the top, who's maximized, I think. JUCO guy, one of the last JUCO guys that Nebraska's really signed. I think that he came to Nebraska, they went down and saw him in a JUCO title game, and Travis Fisher offered him, and I think he made the jump, and he's had a real nice season. Would love to see him catch on a day three draft, and maybe he can do that. I appreciated his game, and I thought he was a good fit for this defense.
Yeah, I just add versatile piece and someone who maybe as much as anybody on the roster is going to benefit from that extra year of eligibility provided to junior college players.
I'll do Heinrich Harburg. I like Heinrich Harburg as a person. I think he's got good cheer, and he's thoughtful, and he has a smile on his face a lot, and it's genuine. It's not fake or, you know, trying to put airs on. That's just who he is. I appreciated his toughness 2 years ago when he's one of the toughest players that Nebraska's had in a long time. The hits that he took in 2023, particularly against Purdue, were just seismic. He got rocked. There's no other word for it. He got rocked. And he got rocked at Michigan State, too. This is a kid that could play through almost anything. So very tough. It's made the move to tight end. That's a transition, one of the hardest positions in the sport to play. I'm surprised there were some people before the season. It's like, oh, he's going to have 50 catches. I'm like, what world do some of these people live in? It's the same people that said Tanner Lee was going to throw for 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. He's a good athlete. He'll have a chance in the NFL on special teams and other things like that. But I remember his toughness from 23 and the fact that he could do so much of it with a smile. and he's thoughtful. I like him.
When Matt Rhule said this is a class that stood in the gap and was part of things when the program was fragile, this is probably the guy that I think of first. Like, he was jerked around at high school when they were trying to recruit over him.
Yeah.
The interim staff did not consider him a quarterback. He had to stand in.
That was my Mickey Joseph there.
Oh yeah, I picked it.
No.
And he had to do that to do what he did in 23, running an offense they didn't want to run, makes the transition to tight end.
Yeah.
It's just a guy who's loved his school, who's absolutely stood in that gap. Major props for him. Always one of the better quotes, better thought producers on the team for sure.
Yeah, I could see him in on the radio one day, or like being a podcaster. He's got that talent. Jalen Gramstad.
Kind of the end of an era in terms of a guy who came in through that summer camp, that post-grad camp, and got noticed and then did so well in a reserve role that Dylan Raiola and everyone's clamoring for him to come back one more time. So a guy who was a winner at Northwest College at the NAIA level, a guy who pretty clearly would make a really strong coach in the future if he chooses to go down that path. So someone that hasn't seen a ton of field time, but I think has had an impact on the program behind the scenes.
Elijah Judy. I'll go here. Probably the best cook on the team. He's tied with Justin Evans as the best chef on the team. That's what everybody told me over the summer when I was writing the story about the nutrition operation. Came to Nebraska, I think, had to learn a lot. So he came to Nebraska as a highly touted transfer from Texas A&M. I don't think it was the easiest transition for him. And Philadelphia guy who had to learn a lot and has learned a lot and became, I think, a very consistent player over the last several seasons. So, yeah, kudos to him. You know, obviously has a family and has done it the right way the last couple of years, growing as a player and growing as a person.
Yeah, agree. Former four-star, was at A&M, came over here and, you know, I think he's been a good rotational piece or contributor on that defensive line. He didn't have to come back this year in 2025, but chose to do so. And I think Nebraska is pretty thankful that he did.
Emmett Johnson.
You know, he's interesting to me in the current situation, Sam, because we're now in the rev share era, and he's that first example at Nebraska where I think you could say he has a greater chance to come back in 26 than he would have 5 years ago because of rev share and how different that money is, you know, I don't know how significant it is. It might not be significant at all. Nebraska might want to pay him to come back and be a preseason Heisman candidate and all this. So 5 years ago, 5 years ago, it's a slam dunk that he's out the door. Right now, not so much, but I've told you this before. I think he's succeeding. His career is going where it is kind of in spite of Nebraska. He was a late offer to them out of high school, buried on the depth chart for multiple years, has proven to be durable, great, just a nice guy, good guy, gets out in the community from a solid family. Nebraska got fortunate. They're very fortunate to have him on the field and off the field.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I've been an Emmett Johnson fan really since, the 23 Purdue game. You know, I thought he played great in that game for reasons that aren't always entirely clear to me. You know, he's kind of been set aside a couple of times, but Dana Holgorsen deserves a lot of credit for saying, nope, you're the guy. And Dana was right. And I have a hard time imagining what this team's record would be right now if he had transferred out. I think that was very fortuitous on Nebraska's part that Holgorsen took over and identified the skill. Derek Branch.
Guy who stuck with it, risen up, found a niche to contribute in on special teams, especially a legacy kid, just somebody who's been a glue guy for the program, not as heralded statistically, but I think someone who's been a big part of building the culture.
Yeah, all those things. Very, very good player in high school. For Lincoln Southeast, and we'll certainly be, if he doesn't want to be a coach, I think he'll be successful in whatever he does. It won't surprise me if he is a coach. Marquez Watson Trent.
The guy who was on the other sideline for the Georgia Southern upset over Nebraska a few years ago, comes in one of the more accomplished portal additions Nebraska's had. I think he's too one of the more thoughtful guys, very thankful. Like when you see a guy who's come from a lower level of a program, group of five program, comes to Nebraska, like I'll remember him for his just kind of awe at the support that Nebraska has. It's easy to take for granted sometimes. And I appreciate his fresh eyes on that. And somebody who has been around the football a lot this year for the Huskers in that second level too.
Michael Booker the third.
kind of like Branch, a guy who's made his name on special teams, and you know, Matt Rhule talked really highly of him as maybe getting some NFL looks moving forward. Just another guy who's kind of been that culture keeper, somebody who individually has been a good story of development. I think that this coaching staff can point to for younger players.
His dad was obviously Michael Booker, who had a pick six in the '96 Fiesta Bowl. So that was pretty cool. Kevin Gaelic, the long snapper.
Well, you remember how much we were talking about long snapping operational issues last year? That has been a total non-topic this year. So, ton of credit to that. That's probably exhibit A on how the transfer portal can shore up a need. So he was able to come in for 1 year and kind of on a free agent deal, and quiet what has been a real issue for Nebraska, or what was a real issue for them previously.
Sure was. Rocco Spindler, maybe the best overall lineman. I think maybe Justin Evans and Henry Litovsky have been just as good, but Rocco's been very tough and a stalwart in there. He's actually become, along with Litovsky, kind of the spokesman of the offensive line. We've requested Elijah Pritchett. Nebraska has not offered him to us to talk to. Evans is quiet on the quiet side. Corcoran, maybe we'll get him today. I hope so. We'll talk about Corcoran in a second. Rocco Spindler, though, Notre Dame transfer, had experienced all the success imaginable at Notre Dame. I think that had come to an end there. Comes to Nebraska, I think he's infused some toughness into the program.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. Everyone's going to remember the finger injury against Minnesota and how he came back and has been their first team.
Luke Longvall.
Iowa Western kid comes to Nebraska. I don't know that I've ever spoken with him, but from what I've heard, very, very thankful to be part of the team. Never really had a chance on the field, but one of those depth providers, and I think guys who's helped enrich that position.
For sure. Aiden Flagey, another long snapper.
Another long snapper. I don't have a ton on Aiden. He was he provided depth
He
there.
had to keep, he came in last year and had to do the job.
He was the guy. He was pressed into duty for
Yeah.
sure.
For sure, right? Desann McCullough. Man, I really like talking to him. Serious guy. Cares about everything. You can tell he came here on a mission. Has played well, I think, for the majority of the season. Got banged up against USC. Didn't play against UCLA. Came back against Penn State. You know, I think he's probably going to play somewhere in the NFL. It's going to be about finding the right position for him, which in the NFL might be a little easier to locate, I think. In the Big Ten, he's down on the line of scrimmage. He's battling down there. I don't know if it'll be quite like that in the NFL. But I enjoyed Desann McCullough's conversations. I don't know that like he produced 8 sacks, like maybe they hoped he would when they brought him in, but I don't know that that's necessarily on him. I think there's a number of things there that came to play.
Yeah, coach's kid, deep voice. He was notable as a transfer because he came to Nebraska looking to play that different position. He'd been that linebacker, and he wanted to play closer to the line of scrimmage. So that belief that he had in himself and that connection with Nebraska stood out to me.
Henry Lutovsky.
This was a guy I enjoyed talking with him as a recruit out of high school. He was fiery and outspoken and brash. At the time, he struck me even back then as someone who was like, this is the kind of attitude you want your offensive lineman to have. And he kind of did it the old school way. He was a part-timer for a while, and then he became the starter and was a great representative at Big Ten Media Days this year. So he's one of those guys who, even through the struggles, would always come out and talk and give his thoughts and be open and honest. So I have a ton of appreciation and respect for guys like that don't shy away from the moment or the struggles and kind of share in that. And I think he's been a big part of what this program has tried to become in terms of being more tough. And so yeah, great, great, great addition. I think he's been enjoyable to have.
Teddy Prochazka.
I mean, you just wonder what if, right? It's the injuries, the three ACLs. I mean, you just hate it for him, but local kid who's stuck with it, and to his immense credit, has continued to coach up his guys and be involved. Like, he's not off to the side, rehabbing and sulking. He's down there, he's traveling with the team, he's part of it. I think one of the heart and soul members of this team for a long time.
I like him. He's got a smile on his face, and he's personable, and a lot of really good qualities in Teddy. And then Turner Corcoran.
I went down and hung out with Turner for a day when he signed out of Lawrence, Kansas, in high school. And he was a high profile recruit then. He became a starter early, was a starter often, and he kind of faded later in his career. Injuries obviously played a part in that, but cool finish in terms of like a guy who was set to just be a jumbo tight end guy, and then because of injuries, he's been able to actually play and play pretty well as a tackle here down the stretch. I always remember him from wearing the run the damn ball hat. He'd always wear that thing around, and he was one of those guys who would swear in a press conference, and you're like, okay, I can see how this is a dude in the trenches. So a guy whose time at Nebraska probably didn't go how he envisioned it 5, 6 years ago, but someone who's made an impact nonetheless and is probably better for the experience.
Yeah, he was really, he had a big personality early in his tenure. I think a lot of players had more personality during the Frost era. They didn't win any games. They had more personality. In the Rhule era, it's a little bit more, straight jacketed, a little bit more robotic. Although not totally, but there's more of that. Corcoran hasn't spoken as much. Got his first start right before Christmas in 2020 when Brendan Hymus opted out, and then Corcoran started at Rutgers. And so here he is getting this start today on Friday, and good for him. He's the guy that we end the senior recollection with. And we'll have a really interesting class, probably a small class next year, before we get into the really big ones with the real recruits in 27. So that's the senior class this time. Okay, let's get to the games. Okay, I'm up four because all the ones last week that we disagreed on, I got right.
Did.
Pittsburgh, Penn State, and TCU. Rivalry week, we got a ton of games, and we're going to have some differences in our picks, I guarantee. Here we go. Egg Bowl, Mississippi at Mississippi State.
I gotta go, Ole Miss. There's gonna be a distraction, yes, but not so much that the Rebels lose.
Ole Miss for me, too. Georgia at Georgia Tech.
Okay.
Okay. I'm gonna go Uga. A&M at Texas. Does A&M need to win this game to make the playoff?
Like the SEC title game. I'm going to go A&M. That first half against South Carolina opens some eyes, but they came back, and I don't trust Texas, even at home. I'm going A&M.
Texas. I like them at home. And they have every bit the talent that A&M does, and A&M's been living on borrowed time a little bit this year. They've gotten lucky a couple of times. The luck runs out. All right.
All right.
Arizona at Arizona State. I know. I'm something.
You're good.
Arizona at Arizona State.
The fight in Jeff Sims, they continue, and I think they find a way. Arizona's okay, but I like Arizona State in this one.
Arizona for me, I feel like Arizona's got just the better operation right now. ASU's been living again a little bit lucky at times, and I think Arizona will have a good plan for Sims, who I'm really happy to see him end his career. He was a really good guy. Just had a weird year here. Northwestern at Illinois.
Maybe this is an overreaction, but I'm going Northwestern. I think they found something. They should have beaten Michigan a couple games ago. Illinois is looking a little flat, a little tired. Give me Northwestern.
I'll take Brett Bielema's crew at home. He'll rebound and get this one by three. Miami at Pittsburgh. Keep that in mind where they're playing the game.
We were just there. My heart's with Pitt, but I can't. I think Miami's going to find a way. I think they're too talented and there's too much at stake. I think the Canes take it.
Fair enough. They have the same thing at stake. I'm taking
Right, but
Pittsburgh. I'm going to take Pittsburgh,
okay.
and they have the same thing at stake. If Pittsburgh wins the game, they go to the ACC title game, and then they can go to the playoff. They have the same things at stake. Miami is the better team. But I do, but it is going to be a noon kick. The weather's gonna suck. I don't know what the weather's gonna be like. It's not gonna be good. I'm taking Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I don't know. I gotta
All
look
right.
at it here. Yeah, it's gonna be 20. Pitt for me. Miami for you. And hey, you know what? I actually hope you're right. In a way, because I don't want to see Pittsburgh in the playoffs. That no, nobody needs to see that. Nobody needs to see them get put in a hurt locker by God knows who. I don't even who. Al, not Georgia. I don't want to watch Georgia beat Pittsburgh by 35 in a dome.
Right.
I want to watch Miami. They have players, but they'll find a way to choke. Kentucky at Louisville.
Speaking of choking, I'm gonna go Kentucky on this one.
Oh,
I think their schedule comes through in a moment like this.
okay.
Louisville is not part of the SEC.
That's true. The Ville for me.
Right.
Florida State at Florida. I'm going to go with the Seminoles. Florida State. They're going to get to a bowl game, and I don't know what's going on. Who cares what's happening in Florida? They don't have a coach. They're probably going to get a coach on Saturday. It might be Lane Kiffin. Florida State for me.
I'm going Florida. I think they're going to play. They have nothing to lose in this game, truly.
No.
Florida State's got it. They're still pretty uptight. They need to make a bowl game. They extended their coach. I think the Gators, they have plenty of talent. I think they play free and find a way.
Oregon at Washington. I'll take Oregon.
Same. It's a formidable home field advantage for Washington, but I still think Oregon's going to take it.
Yeah, me too. Vandy at Tennessee. I'm going with the Vols.
Give me Vandy.
Vandy. Why? You like
Why?
their team? Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're, I mean, they've got the quarterback, and
They
I
do.
think they're like, if this was a game that they played in September, maybe the fact that it's Tennessee gets to them, but I think they're plenty confident in what they're doing.
So far, we are different on, let's see, five, six, seven games. I love it.
Yep.
You're going to kick my butt. Iron Bowl. This one's not hard.
Bama,
Alabama.
Bama,
Wisconsin and Minnesota. I'm taking Wisconsin.
I am too. As crazy as that is, would not have done that probably at any other point during this season. I think Wisconsin's figured something out, and Minnesota's gone the other way.
Yeah, the flex sparring matches with the reporters up there is getting interesting. They're pressing him pretty good, and he's getting a little annoyed. He said this week, he's like, "Hey, we're a developmental program. You know, that doesn't mean that because we're in year nine, we're gonna necessarily be better than we were 2 years." I'm like, "Years, some years we're gonna be experienced, and some years we're not, and some years like okay." He's good. I mean, it's actually pretty interesting stuff to listen to because he's not wrong, but it's like they're like, well, you know, you peaked in year three on campus and you haven't been that good in the last. Anyway, Ohio State of Michigan. The
Buckeyes.
game.
I mean, it's fascinating. It'd be the chaos that would ensue if Michigan wins that thing, given the Big Ten another potential CFP qualifier, the bowl ramifications, all very fascinating. I just don't see them beating Ohio State.
Neither do I, but could happen.
Yeah.
You know, Ohio State could go up there and totally blow the game. It's possible. And finally, Black Friday, the Heroes Trophy, Iowa, Nebraska.
You know, we've talked all year about how it's time for Nebraska to get this thing. And I continue to believe that if this is a game that's played in September or October, Nebraska's probably won a few more of these games. But from what we just saw at Penn State and how Iowa does what Iowa does, I think it's another close game that Iowa finds a way to win in the fourth quarter. I think there's some that war of attrition goes the Hawkeyes' way late. I think they win a one possession game.
I'm taking Nebraska. I've said a couple of different times, I think it's time. And I think Nebraska is prepared for this. And I know that they didn't look like they were prepared against Iowa, but I feel like they're going to come out and play as hard as they can and do whatever they got to do. And Iowa's going to make a mistake or two, and Nebraska's going to win this game. That's my take. So there you
That is
go.
something.
Well, I'm going to stick with my overall thought process, my gut on that. Maybe they'll go out and lay an egg on Friday, or maybe they'll prove me right. I guess we'll find out. But we're different on eight games, so there's going to be movement this week. Movement.
Let's do
all
it.
All right. It's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to this week. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch all these games. For Evan, I'm Sam. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week to talk about signing day. Wow. For Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six Podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. That's KACHAVA.com, code FITNESS.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.